Tracy Chapman on Sunday night. Sort of an anthem for our guest, really, Shane Claiborne. Shane Claiborne is one of the founding members of a community called The Simple Way, hailing from Philadelphia in the United States. At least that's where the community is. That Shane, as you'll hear, is a native of other parts, Tennessee. Shane, welcome to Sunday Nights.
It's great to be here. It's fantastic.
Now, you're in Australia to sell your wares, in one sense, but a very particular sort of goods we're selling. The Simple Way community, people are describing it as renewed monasticism, getting people together in small communities to live simple lives and do good for others. Is that the way you'd describe it?
I think that really all we're doing is trying to take Jesus seriously, you know, and I read the words of Jesus and I just love it. And yet I'm also troubled by much of what Christianity has become, you know.
And you pick a song like that by Tracy Chapman.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And you know, I think of Jesus and I'm reminded of the words of Gandhi, though. When someone asked him if Gandhi was a Christian, Gandhi said, "Oh, I love Jesus. I just wish the Christians took him more seriously." The Christians look so unlike their Jesus. And that's what we're trying to do in Philly, is take the words of Jesus seriously. And I'm convinced that Jesus didn't just come to prepare us to die, but teach us how to live. So we're trying to love our neighbors and take care of each other.
The fashionable word for this these days is intentional communities. That is, people decide to get together and live simply and live in ways which are constructive for the community around them. Is this something you're saying everybody should do, or is it something you are saying, look, those who feel called to this should do it?
Well, the funny thing is, I don't do any of this because I have to, but because I want to, you know. And I remember at one point Mother Teresa, who's a great hero of mine, she was asked by a journalist. They said, "Oh, Mother Teresa, I couldn't do what you'd do if you paid me $1 million." And she said, "I wouldn't do it for $1 million either." You know, and so in some ways, like, I don't think we have to do community, but we get to. And the more I do it, the more I see that community is I think what we're made for, to love and to be loved. And we're sold this lie of individualism and independence. And so we end up really lonely people. And the studies show that the wealthiest corners of the world have the highest rates of loneliness, depression, and suicide. So I think we're talking about life, and we're talking about having groups of people that are transparent with their lives and their struggles, and are reminding each other the good news is that we're not alone in the world.
Well, let's first talk about the essence of the Christian message as you see it, and then we'll move on to how that plays out in community life. So what is the essence? You seem to be saying, look, along the way, Christianity has got encrusted with a few things that are a bit unnecessary, and we need to get back to what the essentials are. So what are the essentials for you?
Almost every time Jesus opens his mouth, he talks about the kingdom of God, you know, and the reign of God coming. But it's not just something that he talks about when we die, but something that we're to bring on earth as it is in heaven. And so I believe that this isn't just an evacuation plan. It's not just about going up when we die, but bringing God's kingdom
down. It's not about the heavenly lifeboat.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what's so beautiful, I think, as one of the theologians, Karl Barth, said, we have to read the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other. So our faith is not about disengaging from the world, but engaging the pain, the injustices, and the suffering of this world.
Because so much of the life of the church, particularly when the church talks about living together in community, that's almost a subtext for flight from the world, to get into little collective huddles, and the world is out there and we're in here and we're safe in the arms of Jesus, and the world doesn't touch us or sully us.
Well, I think it can be that, but I also look at church history, and I think that I mean, even the beginning of the Bible is about God rescuing the Hebrew slaves from their slavery and kind of forming them into a new people, and that's what holy means.
It's about action in the world.
Yeah, so I think there is an essence that, like, Christians are meant to be a holy subculture, you know, a counterculture to the patterns of materialism and racism and consumerism of the world, you know. Even the monastic traditions, I don't think they were going to the desert and leaving society because they were scared and they were just fleeing the world. But I think they were going, this world is really messed up, and we're going to create a new society in the shell of the old one, starting with ourselves.
So you're talking about gathering together in small groups, in communities, as a way of engaging the world rather than withdrawing from the world.
Exactly. Like we live in a really, really broken neighborhood, but it's a place where we practice resurrection. You know,
the reason I ask that is because over the last 100 years or so, at least, Christianity in the West has been dominated by this idea that you get people saved and then you stick them in these holy groups that look after them and nurture them until they die and go to heaven. Now, you seem to be saying, no, we actually have to think about why God put us in the world.
Yeah, well, and I think that's exactly the thing that Jesus was attacking, was the self-righteousness of the religious elite that were looking down on other people, shunning and ostracizing people. And he says to the teachers of the law, the tax collectors and the prostitutes are entering the kingdom ahead of you. And we wonder what got him in trouble, you know. But I think what he's pointing us to when he says things like blessed are the poor is that a lot of times, poor folks, marginalized folks get it. They have each other. They have community. Whereas
that's all they've got.
Sometimes it's all they've got. You know, I'm reminded of this story that some of the kids from Sudan, I think it was, that were pulled out of a really tough situation, brought to the U.S., and years later they were interviewed, and they said, tell us what you've learned. And they said, we learned in Sudan we had nothing except community. Now we have everything, cars, houses, jobs. But we've lost community. And I think that's the real danger, is that we end up living as if the world revolved around us. And I think that we all need community, and that's not to romanticize places of poverty, but I think in a lot of ways we have a lot to learn from folks like the indigenous people of this country or of my own.
It also betokens or requires an attitude to the world itself that runs against one stream in Christian theology, a stream that says the earth is fallen and it's corrupted and we shouldn't sully ourselves with it. You're saying that there's another message that comes through as well, that is that there is something inherently good about creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess that's when you read the end of the book, it gets really good, because it actually has a vision of, in Revelation, the last book of the Bible, you know, is this vision of the new Jerusalem coming on earth. And it says that the river of life runs through the middle of the city. The tree of life is there. It's this beautiful, like, flourishing and renewal of creation. And I think even the scriptures that we've selectively kind of read and distorted, there's a couple of places in the epistles where it talks about the entire creation being consumed by fire, you know, and that's where you get the, you know, well, you've heard the world's going to end in May, right? So, but like that stuff, and yet like theologians show that every other place that those images are used, it's a refining fire. It's not a fire that destroys, but a fire that renews. But it makes a heck of a lot of difference how you live in this world if you think the whole world's just going to, you know, burn up in flames, or if it's actually about restoring this creation to what God wanted it to be.
And you take the restoring view. We are, and our job is to actually be the gardeners rather than the reapers.
Absolutely, yeah.
You're on Sunday nights on ABC Radio. Our guest is Shane Claiborne, a founding member of the Simple Way community in Philadelphia. Shane, let's talk about community. Ever since a book came out in the US a few years ago called Bowling Alone, it's been a discussion that's not only gone on in churches, but around generally in sociology, in anywhere you get people together, what's happening to Western society? The more material goods we've got, the more our communities seem to be disintegrating. And it applies across the board. It applies to involvement in community of any sort, whether that's parental clubs, sports clubs, Rotary clubs, political parties. People seem to be not joining anymore. And you see it most, perhaps only outside the USA, in Western European societies, where people are just walking away from churches. Oh, I don't need it anymore. Now, you're saying that is not just bad for us as individuals, it's bad for the whole society.
Absolutely. You know, when I look at the people who I admire because they are just so alive, you know, there are people that are surrounded, just immersed in community and have people that they're transparent with their struggles. And I think deep down, all of us are really longing for that. And I mean, the scripture, it starts with the first human being made, but it's God doesn't pronounce it real good until they're together helping each other. And we're made in the image of this God that is this plurality of Trinity, of oneness and pluralness, you know. And Jesus says, whenever two or three of you gather in my name, I'm with you. So it is about community. But I think sometimes we get this illusion that we don't need other people. But at the end, I think we end up really lonely. We end up consuming into patterns that just don't make sense. Like, you know, right now in the U.S., the average North American's consuming the same amount as 500 Africans, you know. And I'm sure here in Australia, it's more like 200, you know. But
at the same time in the U.S., and it's true in Australia here too, you get a debate that has rolled out of the sort of ethical and moral realm inhabited by churches into the broader society, the fight between a sort of individualistic notion of the world to a communitarian notion of the world, and people are giving political labels to that these days. You seem to be suggesting that look, beyond this sort of political game playing, there is something deeply important here that's going on that we've actually got to pay attention to. It's not just about simple political name calling about sort of freedom of the individual against the benefits of the community.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we put at odds things that really shouldn't be divorced from each other in the first place, you know, and sometimes we end up overemphasizing whatever we've neglected, so we exaggerate the truths to make our point, and then we keep ending up lopsided. You know, is this a social gospel or is it a evangelical, you know, God saving souls,
yes,
you know,
yes.
And I think absolutely both. I mean, there's the God of the scripture that I read is an absolutely personal God that is wrestling with, you know, people, and God that loves us each and calls us beloved. And yet a God that also is about transforming the world. And if we have if we're only about individuals, I think we can be short-sighted. And if we're only about saving the world and, you know, beat up people trying to do it, then we fall short.
Yes, it's that wonderful line from Charles Schulz in Peanuts, isn't it? Isn't it Lucy who says, I love the world, it's people I can't stand.
Yeah.
You're on Sunday Night. Our guest is Shane Claiborne. Let's talk about how this community then plays out for you. What led you into the group that formed the Simple Way, and what is the Simple Way at essence?
Well, honestly, I think community chose me more than I chose it. I mean, I was a college student in the suburbs at a little Christian college, you know, and then I heard about a group of homeless families, mostly moms and kids, that were living in an abandoned cathedral. And in the newspaper, I read the story, and it ended by saying that these families had been given a 48-hour eviction notice, and if they weren't out of the abandoned cathedral within 2 days, they could be arrested. yeah, those are times where you go, man, that does not feel right, you know. And it's funny because I think sometimes we throw our hands up at God and we say, God, why don't you do something? And we sort of felt God say, I did do something. I made you, you know, get out, get involved. And so we did. And we never really left. That struggle didn't only last 48 hours. It lasted for months and months. And a group of my college friends and I moved into that neighborhood. And a lot of those families are still close friends, and we've been trying to live in the neighborhood together. And we started in one little row house, a bunch of us piled into like an old commune, you know, and now we've grown up, you know, 15 years, and some of us have kids, but we now have a little village, I would say, where we've got about a dozen houses within walking distance and a lot of great neighbors. So we do prayer in the mornings, we do meals together, we throw block parties, we've got community gardens, and we're trying to create a little village together.
It's something I noticed in reading about the community of the Simple Way, that you've deliberately chosen not to follow the path that in the past many communitarian groups have. And communitarianism, and particularly that form of communitarianism which leads people into distinct communities, has a long history in Christianity, mm-hmm. not only back to the days in the century or so following Christ and the emergence of monasticism, but also right up into the 19th century, where you had sort of communes forming off everywhere, essentially out of Christian bases. Many of those became independent religious communities and developed their own theology. What's interesting, I notice, about you is they say, no, we're not in the business of creating another church or another denomination. People in our communities are welcome to go off and worship in whatever denominational stream they feel is appropriate to them.
Yeah, and we came into the neighborhood with a posture of humility to listen and see where, you know, where God and goodness are already at work and try to build on it. And what we saw was that in the inner city in America, like, we don't need more churches. You know, every block has a church and a liquor store, you know, so like, but what we do need is one body of people working together in the neighborhood for the good of everyone. And so that's what we decided. Let's go to Catholic Mass. Let's go to the Pentecostal church. Let's go to the storefront, you know, like, so we are going to, and become a part of the fabric of the church in our neighborhood. And, but we start these missional Christian communities that are doing it, you know, all over. And sometimes there's one congregation we really get more involved with, but really at the end of the day, one of the pastors in my neighborhood, he said real well, Jesus is coming back sometime, and he's not coming back for a harem, but for a bride, you know, so that's what we're after.
I've struggled to imagine some of the discussions one must have late at night, the Catholic debate, debating with the Calvinist about the sort of, you know, the meaning of salvation. But you're able to bridge those gulfs. What happens, because we're talking about gulfs, that 300 or 400 years ago, people were prepared to kill each other within Christianity. You seem to be suggesting that ultimately, when you focus on doing, on that is the life of the Christian, those debates about the nuances of belief actually get subsumed. They don't hit the front. They're there for reflection at a lower order.
Yeah, I was at a university not too long ago, and there was this huge divisions between the young Republicans and the social activist group, and they had all this division happening. So I came in and we had this discussion, and it was funny because at the end of it they said, we can't agree on all the politics, but what we can agree on is that homeless folks shouldn't be cold. And so they started making blankets and taking them out to the streets. And I think that's what I see a lot of times is we can have all kinds of ideologies. And yet at the end of the day, what I care about is not just, are you pro-life or pro-choice, but are you proactive? You know, tell me what that looks like, you know? And I think particularly for younger folks, we've seen the mistakes of the culture wars and the self-righteousness of liberals and conservatives, you know. And at the end of the day, I'm convinced that one of the best things that we need to be able to do is to disagree well with each other, you know. And just as important as being right is being nice. You know, and you can have all kinds of great arguments, but if you're mean, like, no one's really going to want to listen to you.
The threshold of any engagement is the conscious act of love, in a sense, in the way Jesus describes it.
Yeah, and I think that the people that have caught the world's attention, especially with the sake of Christianity, haven't just been people who have great doctrines and ideologies, but they're people that have embodied a beautiful way of living, like Mother Teresa. You know, she's a champion for life, not because she went around wearing a T-shirt that says abortion is murder, you know, but because she came alongside people that were hurting. And for me, that's what I have to ask. In my neighborhood, I have to be pro-life means I got to figure out what to do when a 14-year-old girl gets pregnant. And that comes with – ideologies come with responsibilities.
Yes. And one of the problems, of course, of living life through an ideological lens is absolutism isn't actually the way most people have to live their lives. Mm. Their lives are fought out in a murky grey area, yeah. And not in areas of strict black and white.
And for me, as an East Tennessee kid that grew up in the Bible Belt, that's a humble lesson I've had to learn. But, you know, I mean, I had all these views about homosexuality. And then I met a kid in college that told me he was gay. He didn't understand it. He had been told his whole life that he was a mistake. And he told me with tears rolling down his face that he wanted to kill himself. And at that moment, I think, okay, my ideologies are no good. The question is, can this person find a home in the church, and can he find community and love?
And there's more diversity in creation than perhaps we're aware of.
That's right.
Let's talk about the new monasticism. While we're on this idea of belief and what it is, when people come into your community, what do you say to them you're about? There must be...
Welcome. If you go, we say welcome.
All right. Okay. Point taken. But Benedict had a rule, of the founder of monasticism, developed a rule, and it was basically a rule that was about simply living. It got elaborated into practices. But so what are your basic tenets, and then to what extent are they elaborated?
Yeah, we have a statement of faith and a statement of practices. So there are things that we say at the core of our community. These are things that we hold true, like the bodily resurrection of Jesus. You know, he triumphed over all evil and death on the cross and the resurrection. But then there's practices too, because you can have a doctrinal statement. But I think the big challenge of Christianity has not just been right believing, but right living. So we say these are also things that we hold true, to live simply, not to have more than we need while someone has less. You know, a call to nonviolence and reconciliation.
So the emphasis is on right action, essentially. That is, we are about a community that is about being active in the world.
To marrying
our
belief.
So the principles are active.
And our actions. Yeah, exactly. And so I think of the traditional monasticism, and we don't have all the same forms. Like, we've got married folks, we got folks that like are they don't dress in a habit, you know, and things like that. But I think the essence of it is that we are trying to monastic starts with mono, which is this single-minded pursuit of God and of God's kingdom on earth. And that's really what we're running after.
And what are people expected to do when they join your community? That is, do they have secular employment? And do they come and share their money in common with the group? Or are they employed by the group to work in the community at various social activities or community activities? How does it work?
It's probably good to note that, like, the vision statement for The Simple Way is that we're a web of subversive friends. So like, there's all different layers that people are journeying in. And that's true of monasticism, too, that sometimes it takes 6 or 7 years to be a full-fledged member of the community. And I think that's one place that traditional Christianity has cheapened what it means to be a member or a disciple of Jesus. As we say, all you need to do is come forward at the end of the service and join the church. No, like, that, this isn't just, you know, I think this is about a way of living. So we're growing people into that, and for some folks, they may not agree with everything that we've arrived at, and so we don't say, oh, you can't be a part of the community. We say, well, keep journeying with us, and if it makes sense for you to land here, then land here, you know. But I think that what we don't do is so try to make everybody welcome that there's no distinctiveness anymore to what it means. I mean, you know, America, that's the quintessential, like, where everything's Christian, nothing is Christian. You know, when your money says in God we trust, when our economy looks like the seven deadly sins, you know, what becomes at stake is the essence of our faith. So we're trying to have something that people can actually grab onto when they say, what does it mean to be Christian? We could say, come and see. We'll show you at least our best shot at it.
Shane Claiborne's our guest on Sunday night. Shane is one of the founding members of the Simple Way community in Philadelphia. What sort of activities would I be engaged in as a sort of just somebody who hangs out with people in your community around, you know, back home in Philadelphia at the moment?
You know how to jump rope, double dutch? We spend a lot of time in the streets. We spend a lot of time hanging out with neighbors. It's funny because as you read the Gospels, half of the Gospels are interruptions and surprises. You know, folks pulling on Jesus's shirt and saying, "Hey, my son's sick. Can you come over?" You know, or I mean, his first miracle was turning water into wine to keep a party going. You know, so we don't get to do that every day. But you know, so we spend time with neighbors. We wake up and greet the days together every morning with morning prayer. There's activities that happen sometimes during the day, like food distribution or helping kids with homework. We've got gardens going. We have nights that we do Bible studies sometimes, and we have nights that neighbors invite us over to dinner. So, it's very much, just becoming a part of a real neighborhood and trying to live out our
faith. And is this deliberately in a poorer neighborhood? A deprived neighborhood?
It's a neighborhood that is statistically the poorest district in Pennsylvania. It's the old kind of ruins of the industrial economy. So we've got 700 abandoned factories, thousands of abandoned houses. So I always say it's poised for resurrection. But there's a lot of heroic people in my neighborhood, and I'm very proud.
There's a lot of squatters in those buildings, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, our whole community started out of a squat.
What's the attitude of others in the community, the haves rather than the have-nots? How do you get on, for instance, with the law enforcement agencies? How do you get on with the other churches? Do they see you as, oh, those strange people down the road?
It kind of depends on who you ask. The funny thing that happened when we first moved in was our neighbors all got it. They love what we do. We're in and out. But the city officials came in and they said we were breaking a law by living together with so many people. We're like, well, really, what law is that? They said, the brothel law. We were the first Christian brothel in Philly. And so we fought it through the courts, and we ended up, you know, getting a variance because all of our neighbors supported us and everything. But there are plenty of times where I've really begun to understand when the Apostle Paul writes that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities and powers of this world and the real life, you know, rulers of our city. And so there are some really, really ugly things that we've seen over the years. We've seen laws that were passed that made it illegal to feed people who are living on the streets. And at times we've gone to jail for continuing to feed people who are on the street, you know,
really?
and things like that. But our
goal. What were they seeing you as encouraging beggars? Were they? Was that the argument?
I think the argument was we need more tourists and you're not helping. But yeah, it might have become more sophisticated than that. But in the end, we've raised really good questions, I think. So we were arrested for feeding folks. We went to court, the judge ended up saying, what's in question isn't whether or not these folks broke the law, but what's in question are the laws that we're passing. And we were all found not guilty. In fact, he said, you guys aren't criminals, they're freedom fighters. In the end, I mean, our goal is to try to love our neighbors and to interrupt injustice. And so if that gets us in trouble, so be it.
How far does that go? I mean, we've talked about a community level, but what about a stand for justice on a larger level? Like for instance, would your community say generally you're pacifist in your orientation? Would it extend that far? And then if we're pacifist, that means we act in certain ways in certain situations.
Well, I sure don't think pacifist means passive. I think it means, you know, to actively interrupt injustice, but nonviolently. So, boy, whether that's issues of gun violence, where right now, I saw a study in Australia, it was like you all had less than 50 gun homicides. We in the U.S. had over 10,000, and in Philadelphia alone, we have a couple hundred, so almost a homicide every day or two. So those are things that we are actively interrupting. You know, we're protesting outside of gun shops. We're trying to care for the victims of crimes.
The NRA aren't among your prime sponsors.
I'm still trying to kind of, you know, caress that relationship, you know, but not yet.
It's a pity Charlton Heston is no longer available to speak on your behalf. Yeah, I mean, he did well as Moses.
I wish you would have stuck with that role. But, it does, like, to me, all of the issues have risen out of the real context of my neighborhood. Like, I'm from a military family, so, like, you know, I didn't grow up, you know, like, thinking all this stuff. But I've come to really see the truth of what Dr. King said. And he said, I began to realize that I can't speak against the violence of the ghettos without also speaking against the violence of my government. And, of course, that, you know, that call led me to Iraq as a Christian peacemaker, and I just returned this last year. But I believe we have to be actively getting in the way of injustice and of everything that destroys life.
Shane Claiborne, we're almost out of time, but that commitment to that wider justice agenda ultimately leads you out of the community into civil society. And it's something of a paradox that Christianity has formed so much of the web of civil society that it's almost, for many people, seen as not really any longer the essence of the matter. That is, religion is now so permeated in the society that, oh, well, you're Christians, you're over there. You're actually not part of the fabric and warp and weave of the essence of what made our society. Now, that's not so much true in the US, where there is a polarizing debate about the place of religion. But if you go to Europe or even Britain or Australia, those principles, those essential things that you say come out of the life of Christ and became part of the structures of society are there to such an extent that people are saying, well, we don't need religion anymore. Mm. You're saying, no. If you lose religion, you actually ultimately lose something critical.
Well, I would go even further than that to say, like, I'm not as concerned about religion as I am about people understanding that there's a God that loves them and finding community and helping each other walk through this dark world, you know, and I don't think that Jesus just came to set up a religion, you know, and in fact, I think religion was one of the biggest obstacles to what he was trying to do in the world, you know, but I do think that in the end, it's interesting because some of the best expressions of Christianity have remained beautifully countercultural, like the Amish. You know, like I love the Amish. They you know, live a couple hours from where we live, and yet, like, their way of life is becoming more and more relevant to our society because it's a critique of progress. It's a critique of cars, and they're not going to be hit too hard by the recession. You know, their life isn't destroyed by what happens on Wall Street, and I think it's the innocence of that that in many ways it deepens the spirituality that has only been belief-based. I'm not trying to convince you to be Amish, but, you know, but I think that we need to reclaim community and to reclaim the gospel as a way of living in the world that actually embodies good news.
Shane Claiborne, great to have you on Sunday night. Thanks so much for giving us the time.